Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here. Sorry for the slight delay. Not quite sure why it takes that long to get started and spooled up, but we'll see what we can do about getting that fixed. Tonight's show, episode number 10, Straight Talk, Preparing Your Practice for Growth. With me tonight is Han Tran. Good evening, Han. How are you?
Good evening, Jim. I'm doing well. Good evening, everyone.
Absolutely. Dr. Hunsinger will be joining us as soon as he finishes up with his patients. As you well know, he's actively practicing dentistry, and once he gets an opportunity to wrap things up, he'll be calling in. So with that, we're actually going to change the format of our show a little bit, and we're going to talk about the typical things we do at the end of the show so we can give Bill enough time to be able to call in. So I'd like to obviously relate a story that Han shared with me last week, that we had an opportunity to have a listener who contacted us, and to our delight, as well as a little surprise, we found out that she has listened to every one of our episodes since the beginning. I don't know about you, Han, but I'm humbled, excited to actually know that there's someone out there that maybe we're really actually being helpful to, and that we're providing information, and there are folks that can benefit from what we're talking about. So, I mean, to that end, it's just really exciting that what we're doing is helping out. And that's really why we want to do this show and talk every Tuesday night about that.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I kind of kidding with her that, listen to a blog about design sometimes could be a little monotonous. You know, for us it's exciting stuff, but for others who are not in the, in the field of design and construction, things like that, it's like asking to read a math book, a couple of chapters in a math book, and or watch paint dry out on a wet day. But yeah, it's it was a pleasant surprise to hear that we have a follower that have been plugging in every week and, and getting value information that she could use in planning her, her new practice. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, it is cool. It is cool. And obviously, anyone out there can call in and ask live her question. You can get us at that 657-383-1442 number. You can email us. You can get us at our website of www.hjtdesign.com. You can call us on our 800 number at 1-866-213-1268, or even email Han or I at our email addresses, which are on that website. To that end, I also would like, we have gone through, well, this is our episode number 10, and we're going to be spooling up and creating the next 10 episodes. And I'd like to throw out to the audience out there that if you email us a topic that you'd like to have discussed, we'll do everything we can to integrate that into one of our next 10 shows. So feel free to, you know, send us your topic. Maybe it's something that you have always been interested in or had a question on, or it's something that you need an answer for right now. Just jot that down in your email correspondence, and we'll do everything we can to put that in the lineup for the next 10 shows. The other part that is out there is our next show, which is on Tuesday, October 30th, is going to be a live interview with Mike Montgomery from Live Oak Bank. Mike is a senior loan officer with Live Oak, and Live Oak is a major SBA lender in the dental medical world. He has an unbelievable amount of knowledge. He specializes in SBA loans, and you've got a perfect opportunity to pick his brain, because he's going to be live on the show with Han and I next Tuesday. With that, Han, let's do a little discussion about hot topic on Dentaltown today or this week.
Well, I think we have a few minutes, so there's two topics I like to cover. We often, in dentistry, you hear the acronym ADA, and you think of the American Dental Association. In construction, ADA stands for American with Disability Act, which is a federal law. From time to time, we run into other states that have accessibility guidelines that are similar to. I mean, they all use the ADA as the basis to create their own state accessibility code. But I think the interpretation of the codes often are based on, are taken very lightly by designers and architects, and they don't invest the time in verifying the specific requirement. They make a lot of assumptions. And unfortunately, if those assumptions are off, the only team member that end up paying for those mistakes are usually the client, the owner, or the dentist. And so mainly there was a discussion. I have a town leader had reached out to us and talked about his particular design and asked if we can provide some technical input and recommendations for changes and so on. And so we did. It was brought to my attention that the individual that was designing his office is with a supply company who supposedly are certified and trained in the area of accessibility guidelines, to provide review services and so on. And that certainly have some credence to their ability. However, just because ADA doesn't always, it's not a cut and dry interpretation. And so even though the space ADA had to do with accessibility, or in this case, it was a facility in Texas. So Texas accessibility guidelines is what they were following. Even though the space is designed specifically, let's say the restroom is designed to meet the accessibility guideline, however, building codes also affect how effectively that design will meet, will be in compliant. We have ran into this a couple of times. You know, the final interpretations are up to the building official. They can certainly make the interpretation more stringent. So you can fight them, you can work with them, or you can do what they have pointed out, as long as it's somewhat logical or reasonable. In this case, we have a let me say that over the weekend, I was talking to my daughter, and she said to her son that Grandpa is really safe. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, that's an interesting statement about me. Yes, I tend to be to function on a safer side because usually it just means that there's less hassle. Not that we want to over-design, but design in a way that it gives you the least problem without, you know, without taking up more floor space because you can. So in this case, the let's say the restroom was designed and it meet the Texas accessibility standards. However, if you apply the building code in the you know in the building code, there's a requirement that's associated with the corridors. And some building official would say corridors for a single occupant space, like a dentist's office, is not a big deal. They just brush it off and say, no big deal, so move on, everything's good. Some building officials say, well, the code say that the corridor, regardless of whether it's a single occupant space on a standalone building, or a single occupant space as part of a larger complex, they still want that corridor to be per code, which is 1 hour rated wall assemblies. Now, we ran into this just recently, right, Jim?
Yes, we did.
And what that means is that the wall had to be a 1 hour rating. That means all the doors within that wall have to be also 1 hour rated. I mean that all the doors have to have closures. And because of that requirement, that makes the bathroom, which is per Texas accessibility standard compliance, it met the compliance. However, because of the corridor requirement, it makes that design non-compliant. So what I'm trying to say is that you can't design in a bubble. You can't design like you're the, you know, you're on an island. Everything that associated with that building, whether it's building code, plumbing code, electrical code, or accessibility guidelines, they all have to work in unison. Otherwise, it would just be a headache once you hand it over to an architect, because it seems like a lot of the offices that that are posted on you know on Dentaltown for review are done by designers and supply companies, and they're not you know codes is something that they take very lightly. I mean that's including things like OSHA. Okay, they just kind of brush it off and very nonchalant about it. And at the end, when it's handed off and ready to you know to go into production and to be engineered, that's when the discoveries could really, you know, change the outcome, the final outcome of the design. So,
absolutely.
In terms
absolutely.
Of design,
what we've
go ahead, Jim.
What we've done before, and this is pretty much standard for us in our practice, as you well know, Han, is that from day one we'll integrate the input of the local government agency, be it the code official, be it the plans examiner. Once we have a preliminary concept down, that's the time to sit down with them and review all aspects of the design so that they are the best solution is that they are part of the decision-making process and they're part of the team that's designing this practice. because it's a lot easier to work with an entity like that when they know that what you're asking or what you're trying to accomplish, that their input is valid and it's going to be integrated, as opposed to an adversarial kind of arrangement where we come in with, this is what we want to do, take it or leave it. You can very quickly get a building official or plans examiner on the defensive, and that's the last thing you want to do, because you want to create a smooth, cooperative arrangement with them so that they are part of that decision-making process, so that if there is an issue, let's say there's a discrepancy or there is a conflict between the American with Disabilities Act and a local handicap accessibility code, you know, which takes precedent? What would they like to do? And so they already understand that problem from the beginning. They're part of the solution, so that when the complete design is done, it's integrated into working drawings. Those working drawings are then submitted to the building department for the plans examiner to review and eventually authorize and check off. He or she is already familiar with what's going on, as says, absolutely, this is what we talked about. I remember and I understand why we made these decisions. It's a smooth flow. They check it off and say, next. So you get an approval, as opposed to a big long correction letter, which then requires a whole lot more work and possible redo and possible delay and all those things. But you're right, there are communities within the country that have their own accessibility codes that are either more stringent or they're different and are actually in conflict with the federal guideline of America with Disability Accessibility Code. So you're right, it is a issue that needs to be addressed, and mostly address it early.
Yeah, you hit a couple items on the head there, Jim. When you deal with municipalities, often I heard too many comments off the cuff that, they're not smart folks and they don't do a good job and stuff like that. Those people that make that kind of comment don't realize that these are professionals that came from the design and or construction industry. They may at one time are in the in the position or on the other side of the table trying to do the things that that's best for their client by doing things that may be deemed as compromising in terms of code. They know the tricks. They know those things that people think about that they may pull after they get their certificate occupancies. And so the comments that I've heard from building official often when we approach them early on during the design process is that they like the fact that we brought the project to their attention, so they know what's coming down the pike. They like the fact that we come to them for a cursory review, so that they know that they are not going to get a package where they're going to need to spend a lot of time going over everything that's that our general idea, that general knowledge. So they become somewhat like a virtual member of the team. They are the resource that we often go to simply because they make the final decision. So why not get the hard stuff out, off the table first, from the very start. So, it is, it's just one of the things that you want to establish a good working relationship, a respectable and trusting working relationship with your code official, because they, believe it or not, they have more than just one guy or two guys or gal that come out into the field. Often the assumption is that once they review the building and give you the code, the certificate of occupancy, they would never be back in the building. And I often chuckle when that kind of comments are made, is that you don't realize that their team, including the fire marshal, whose job is usually to visit your building at least once or twice a year to just check and make sure that your building is being used as a storage bin for hoarding, compostable stuff, and that everything is safe. So they bingo on projects, and believe it or not, I'm pretty sure they have good access to the information of what you submitted when the space was built. So trying to pull the wool over their eyes, there's only one party that's going to pay for it, and that's usually the owner. Okay, so
yeah, do everything above board. Yeah, I've never had a building official who said they would not review the drawings early on in the design process, and they've always thanked us for doing that in the 30-plus years that I've been doing this. So, you know, it is a very advisable way. What else did you say? You had another topic?
Yeah, this is about pocket doors. Not so much, whether to use or not to use. I find this is more in term. Now, we're talking about ADA. This is specifically, and then dealing with ADA and ergonomics, because with pocket doors, we've been using it almost on all of our projects. Just kind of strange throughout my entire career. I've never put in a single pocket doors in any projects until we start looking at dentist offices. They must sell a ton of doors. But anyway, so we're not talking about the quality of the door or its ability to provide privacy and or noise isolation. We're talking, the topic that I'm talking about is the ergonomics of the hardware. Again, ADA is an area that I'm really surprised when we deal with pocket doors is I haven't run into a code official that actually say you can't use a pocket door because this or that. They never actually say anything about pocket doors, whether it meet, whether the requirement, the design meet ADA. For instance, if you have a swing door, you will put the hinge closest to the corner of the wall. So you always, you go from the face of the wall out about 3 to 4 inches, and there's the hinge side of the door. It's, so it latch farther out roughly 3 feet, at the end of the, along the wall. Well, if you have pocket doors, it's totally reverse. Okay, so if you have a swing door at the latch, you will have a clear minimum clearance of 18. If you're on the pull side, it's 18. Or you put on the push side, it's 12 inches. So if you reverse that,
Hey Han, you're breaking up. We're actually hearing kind of every other word. At least I am.
Okay.
Hopefully that's not the case. But you had said that the it was how much inches and then 18 inches?
If on the latch side of the door, okay, if you're on the push side, then you need 12 inches. On the pull side of the door, you need 18 inches clear. That would meet the ADA. Yes. Okay. So if you have a pocket door, the pocket door is installed in the opposite arrangement. So the the door as it slides out to close the opening, it's the hinge side for the swing door, that will be the new latch side for pocket door. Okay, so if you really apply ADA rules or guideline to the T, that means that 12 inches from the face of the wall to the opening of the pocket door opening would be the minimum clearance that you would need. And that would basically make your room, it would force the room to be wider. Okay, so there's a few things in the design of dentist office that are, it's almost like it's under the radar for code official. And pocket door is one of them. Nevertheless,
Han, you still there? We've lost you, Han. Well, while we wait for Han to get connected back on, which I don't think he knows we're off yet, I will text him. But what Han was getting at is that the width of the, mostly the corridor, would be the one area that would make it much wider, because you'd have to have the ability on both the left side and the right side of a bucket door. And that would then predicate that you end up, let's say you had a pocket door at the end of the corridor, that effectively means that if you have a 3 foot wide opening, that you're going to then have a 12 inches and then 12 or 18 inches, 12 inches on one side, 12 or 18 inches on the other side, depending on what direction you come from. So it effectively makes a much wider corridor arrangement. And that is the issue at hand that that a pocket door creates. Now, if you have a pocket door that's in line with a corridor running parallel to the length of the corridor, then you're going to get a much different kind of arrangement. You have to look at it in relationship to inside the room as opposed to outside the room. I'm going to ask Han to call in on his other device to get him back on. So that looks like I've got him.
Can you hear me?
Han, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you there. What I was describing to the folks was that specifically, if you put a pocket door like at the end of a corridor, that's where that comes into effect and actually makes your corridor much wider because of the clearances required. And then if you have pocket doors that are in line with the corridor that basically access, let's say, example, an operatory, then you have to look on the inside of that operatory on, you know, how that pocket door is accessed and the clearances that require it. So, yeah, you're right. It is a complicated process. And I also just got a text from Bill that says he'll be on with us in about 10 minutes. So
terrific.
Yeah, that's perfect.
We can finish up.
Yeah, I think so. That let's jump into the topic at hand for tonight, and Han and I can set the stage for what Bill's going to be presenting. But obviously, let's paint the picture. The picture is that you, as a dentist, have made the determination, based upon all the other stuff we've talked about up to this date, that you're ready to do something to your practice. And this could hold true for a remodel. This could hold true for a renovation of an existing building. This could hold true for a brand new build. What we're going to be talking about tonight really is germane to all of those. It just has to do with the amount of size. Operatories, what you're going to be doing, all that stuff is obviously important, but it's the underlying aspect of what should you in your practice be preparing for. Now, here's some interesting facts that you may or may not be aware of, but we have seen it. We've seen it come to play, and we've seen how it is extremely critical and crucial to the success that you be ready and prepare for it. One of which is the question that's always asked is, when do I start preparing for the new practice? We're going to use the phrase new practice as one of those three things. Either it's the remodel, it's the renovation, or it's the new build. And the answer to that question really is, you need to start preparing for that really the minute you start the design process. So that once you have an understanding of what that new facility is going to be like, you can start implementing the things that we're going to be talking about tonight from day one, so that you are prepared. The ultimate goal is that you are prepared to literally, if you want to call it that, hit the ground running, be in a position that the day that you open the doors to the new facility, the newly renovated facility, the brand new facility, you're ready, willing, and able. And that's just not you. That's you, your staff, your ongoing team, your systems, your IT folks. Everything is ready, and that includes the ability to even have patients lined up in this new practice, so that we always like to set it up in such a way. We always recommend that on Friday, you may or may not have a full load. Maybe you do a half a day. On Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, or Saturday, Sunday, basically, you are moving everything over. Your systems are up and running. You're doing your dry run. And then on Monday morning, when you open the doors to your new practice, you're firing on all cylinders. Han?
Yes.
I mean, that's really the scenario that we like to. Yeah, that's really the scenario we like to see set up.
There's an awful lot of work between once you, start the design process to the time you open, and not all of it deals with design and construction. Get your marketing, get your signage, get your equipment, get your team put together, and make sure that they're familiar with the software, they're familiar with the equipment, and all that. It's just a lot of stuff to learn.
There is, and it's not all, like Han said, it's not all design as in architecture. It's not design issues, but it's very integrated and works in dovetail with the design of what's going on. So that, you're going to a new facility. And we all know that a new facility there's going to be a built-in learning curve. You got to get used to it. That's why I always like to say, try to establish a dry run kind of scenario, at least the weekend before, so that you're really able to feel comfortable, and your staff is really able to feel comfortable on how they're going to utilize this new space, how they're going to work with this new space, and how they're going to be efficient. Obviously, the whole idea of why you're doing this is that you want to be as efficient as possible, so that you can effectively be in a position to be able to see more clients, make more money, and realize all the good things about having this new practice. Now, another really interesting factoid, which most people don't understand and you sure have to be prepared for, is that on average, the minute you open the doors to a new facility, you will begin to realize a 20 to 25% increase in your patient load. And that is almost a given. It happens, and it's a natural kind of thing. You can't really do anything about it other than be prepared for it. You're not going to create
it. It's a good thing.
Oh, it's a good thing, but also it can be a very bad thing. and if you're not prepared for it. Because if you're, you know, if you're in a situation where maybe you're not properly staffed or properly or ready to have the right staff in place to be able to handle that, all of a sudden a 25% increase in your practice is going to do one thing. It's going to extend your time frame from when a new patient calls to when you can get them in a door. And obviously, you want to be able to do that and do that as quickly and as efficiently as possible. Because if they have to wait weeks and weeks and weeks before you can even get a new patient in the door, you're going to very quickly create a scenario where people are going to say, well, you know, these guys just don't have their stuff together. I'll go someplace else. Unfortunately, we as humans have very quick attention spans, and we don't like to wait. I mean, why do you think everybody likes to park at the very closest parking spot toward the door, wants to get their food in, to get in and out of a fast food restaurant within minutes? Why is that? It's just that's human nature. Human nature is like that. So to wait weeks and weeks and weeks and not be prepared to be able to accept that 25% increase, you must prepare for it. You must be ready for it. And you must be staffed accordingly so that you can handle something like that, because it will happen without a doubt, whether you're ready for it or not. And if you're ready for it, then you get to take the advantage of, okay, I've already got an increase in my patient load. Now, once you've got them in the doors, then excellent service keeps them in the doors and keeps them coming back. And so you've already seen a pretty good bump in your patient load from day one. And then let that grow exponentially, because they're going to talk to other people. They're going to talk to other people. And typically we ask the question is, why is that? Why does that happen? Well, it's human nature that when someone sees something new, there's a curiosity. That curiosity is, oh, that's a new facility. Inherently, because it's new, we as humans feel that it's better. It's better than maybe the old place that we've gone to before. So let's go over to the new guy or the new gal and see what they're all about. Well, you've got your golden opportunity to get new patient and retain them. On?
That is your chance to impress. I totally agree with Jim in that, we're very inquisitive. And of course, you know, when you look at a new facility, there's new competition. Perhaps, you will get better service for better value as well. So naturally, you're going to try and check it out. And if you don't check it out, more than likely, you're going to get a flyer or something that encourages you to take advantage of the special that they offer and things like that. So, because the new facility, because there's so many things to learn. And Jim, when you talk about growth, you're talking about an existing practice moving to a new location. In that case, most of the dentists already have a system that they have in place. They may make a few changes, but in the new facility, it's just a matter of getting used to where things is put and getting used to how the traffic patterns and stuff like that are adapting to the new physical space. But for dentists that starting out on their brand new practice for the first time, that is the issue of being ready. It's kind of have a different dynamic, because if you've done a fair amount of of marketing, if you're in a high visibility environment, things like that, then certainly the new patient base is going to take notice of you. But to staff up in tune of like a fully running office, ready to take on pretty much any load that takes a little time. But in any case, preparedness and to take on any kind of growth is paramount. It's better to be ready than trying to catch up.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure when Bill gets on, he'll talk about things like setting up your systems in such a way that, for example, let's say you're going from maybe a 5 operatory to a 10 operatory. Well, obviously, going to a 5 or 6 operatory to a 10 to a 12 operatory, that might mean that you're bringing on additional staff. It might mean you're bringing on associates. These associates may or may not be integrated into your system. Now, the best solution, of course, there would be that you integrate them into the system earlier so that you work out the working relationship, and then you do that thing that Bill talked about before in one of our last episodes, where he talks about maybe doing a split shift or a combined split shift, where there are times when you are working a certain time and longer hours, but you're working in the evening and less during particular days, and the other associate is working those other times, so that you get a longer hours per day availability to your patients, but also you are positioning your practice in such a way that you're able to then start dealing with you're a 5 op that's actually acting like a 10 op. Your practice is actually running like it's 10 operatories. It just so happens that the two doctors are not there at the exact same time all the time. So when you open your doors to your new 10 operatory practice, you can then transition into, okay, our hours are going to change, or theoretically, you could then continue on with the split shift and add more potential times to the overall possible client scheduling. So, it's a complicated, but you're right, it's an exciting time, but it does require a lot of pre-planning. So you as the doctor, in the midst of dealing with this, at the same time, we're dealing with all the design, making decisions and processes and that kind of thing. Don't get caught off guard by not thinking about this stuff early. You must think about it, ask questions. Obviously, if you're working with us, Dr. Bill is an exceptional resource. Get a hold of him, ask questions to him on what maybe should or shouldn't be done, or what you can or can't do early, because he's done it. He's done it numerous times. We've been involved in it a bunch of times, and it's really crucial that you are in fact prepared to be a success, because that's really what you're going to be the minute you open those doors, just with that increase in the 20 to 25%. But at the same time, you've got all this new facility, you've got all these new hopefully operatories, you've got all these new equipment, you've got all these new systems, you maybe got new staff, and you're ready to hit the ground running. Okay, let's see. Yeah, Bill will be getting with us here in a minute. Honwood, did you want to elaborate anything with what I've missed so far?
No, I think you covered pretty well, Jim. Let me see. There's one. If you are, starting a new practice for the first time, you prepare yourself to be, the leader. Okay, you suddenly are now the boss. So it's part of the, it's a change. It's a mindset. Secondly, you will be the one who's responsible for everything that's going right and everything that's going wrong. So if you there's equipment, there's technologies and all that stuff. So if you're not an individual that are savvy in technology, make sure that you have a system in place where you have people that can respond.
We're having great technical difficulties tonight because we just lost Han. Let me get him a text. I don't know. Is it sunspots tonight or what it is? But we're obviously having technical issues with the internet connectivity. Love computers. Love the internet when it works. When it doesn't, just like anything, especially even with your systems, when they don't work, it tends to be frustrating. But I think what Han was talking about was that. If you're doing a new practice, for example, what's the set of criteria that you need to be able, let's see. Han, are you there?
Hey, Jim. I am back.
Okay.
My apology. For some reason, technology is not working well for us this evening.
I know. Sunspots. Something.
That's right.
Last thing we heard you were talking about was that you're starting up a new practice.
Wow, you lost that much information.
Yeah.
Okay, should I repeat it? In terms of technologies and equipment and stuff like that, it would be to your benefit to learn something about it. You don't necessarily have to be an expert, but at least learn the basic of how everything is turned on and turned off. And things of that nature, so that you're not paying a lot, paying technicians to come out and turn on, flip a switch and turn on the machine. Okay, there's, I could say, that there's a lot of new things to learn, but if you prepare yourself early on in the process before you actually open the door to accept new patients, it will make your life a little bit less stressful.
Well, exactly, as you said, as being the leader, you get to lead the direction of the practice just like you do now. You lead the direction of your current practice, but you've now got to lead differently because you have a different facility. So there may be areas that are very important that you have new, or you may be areas where you're expanding your practice capabilities, a lot of different things. So you've got to work out those bugs. But mostly, if you can set up a system and work out those bugs before you actually get into the facility, you'll be better off and more ready to be able to take on that new facility. I mean, I can only imagine what it's like going from a 5 or 6 operatory and then all of a sudden having 10 or 12. That's just got to be daunting.
Yes.
To be able to say, well, okay, now I've spent all this money. I've spent all this energy. I've got all these operatories. They better be full because you sure as heck don't want them to be empty because you're going to have a much larger, as they call it, nut to crack every month. And so why be in a position to be playing catch up? Nobody likes to play catch up.
But Jim, is that before you jump from 5 or 6 op to 10 or 12 ops, you probably already have the good indicator that you are just busting at the seam and you need more clinical space. I mean, the only thing that I think the biggest change is not so many how many chairs, but it's that now you have a larger, not just a facility, but a larger team to manage. It makes it, if you don't have a system down of how you manage your team, how you lead your team, it just makes your job a lot more difficult. Whether you're old at the game or new at the game, being a student to your business, being a student to learn new things, should be part of your character trait anyway. Technology change all the time, so you need to be somewhat on top of that. System change, staff change. So it should be, it's exciting. It's intimidating. Probably scare like, like there's no tomorrow at the same time, but it could be a great thing. It should be a great thing.
Bill, are you there?
Hey, I showed up.
Hey all
Bill.
Right.
How are you, buddy?
Well, we've beat this subject to death. And now we need the expert to really tell our listeners what they need to do. We've already said that they obviously need to start early and prepare for the growth that's going to happen, to be in a position to, you know, hopefully have all your systems and that kind of stuff in place. But for the next 10 or 15 minutes, we'll kind of leave it up to you to discuss really what should a doctor be doing before he opens those doors to his new facility.
Now, what we're talking about is somebody who's got an established practice who's moving to a new place. Is that kind of where we are right now?
Yeah. It's either going to be that they've got a new renovation and they're getting more operatories, or they're building a new facility and they're getting a lot more operatories. But you know, they've already made a decision and they're moving forward. What should they do to be able to be prepared for that day they open the doors to that new place?
Okay, well, one of the first things you should never do is to schedule yourself to have one of these calls when you haven't been in the office for 5 days. That's not a smart thing. So, and then the other thing you shouldn't do is you should never do it when there's a full moon, because it's a full moon here in beautiful Swanton, Ohio. It was a busy, exciting day today. It was fantastic as far as being busy. It was awesome and productive. So back to the topic. So what you guys are talking about is, and one of the things that we found was as we were growing the practice, and as you guys well know, we went from 3 ops, and then we went to 4, then we went to 5, and then when we got to 5, we split shifted the office, and at that point, we had, I can't remember how many employees, 2 doctors and 4 hygienists and 4 front desk people and probably 6 assistants. And what we decided to do was we decided we didn't know everything. And we actually brought consultants in to review all of our systems that we have in the office to make sure we were doing things in a productive manner. So we went through everything. We went A to Z. How to set rooms up, how to tear rooms down, how to talk to patients, how to answer the phone, how to do financial arrangements. Everything was set up and organized, and all the new people were trained to understand that. And we set our goals, and we had our vision, and we knew where we were going. So, and we knew that the challenge that we were having was we couldn't get patients in a timely manner. So when you can't get patients in a timely manner, you know you have to expand the office. So we probably started, I guess, we were having this discussion before, and I believe that what we had done in our particular case and what doctors need to think about is, how big do I need to go? So I think I've given a pretty clear picture. If you're going to work split shifts, you want to get at least the 5 ops. Even if you're by yourself, you want to get the 5 ops. So let's say you've got your 5 ops, you're working by yourself, and you know you've got to expand the office. So at that point, you've got to think about bringing an associate in, and you've got to get them trained and up to speed. But at the same time, you've got to be looking at the structure you're going to be building. So what we did is we decided how many ops we're going to have, how many square feet it was going to have, what the land was going to cost, where it was going to be, and an approximate cost. And there was a budget made up to make that all work, to make that building work. And so what we had done was we geared up the practice so when we moved into that new facility, we were going to be busy from day one. Now, the interesting thing is we did a lot of marketing in those days. We did a lot of direct marketing through postcards and mailers and inserts. So whatever marketing you're doing that works, you need to do that and increase that. If you make your office more efficient, then you're going to be making more dollars per patient. You're going to be seeing new patients. So you can start to already start to meet your budget as you're getting ready to move. What happened is, it's interesting what happens is, if you're putting up a new structure, and you've got a good location, which I know, guys, we've talked about in the past, but you're looking for a place that people go by and cars go by, that they start looking at the facility and start going, I wonder what that is. And of course, we had a sign up what it was. And it's amazing. When the doors open, you start seeing more new patients and you start to be busier. So one of the things that we found in the past is that doctors want this new facility, but they can't figure out what we call crack the nut. In other words, pay the bills and make it work. So that's why, in many cases, what we're doing now, what I've been doing is, since I've done this several times, is to actually take a snapshot of the practice and make sure that production is where it should be, doctor productivity is where it should be, hygiene productivity is where it should be. And if those numbers, and I got to tell you, 99% of the time so far, I don't think I actually haven't met anybody. In fact, I would have to tell you that not even I was producing at a level we should have been. But nobody's actually been running the numbers they should be when they're getting ready to move. So what we've been able to do in many cases is to increase the production in the present facility 10 to 15 or 20%, so that it makes it a lot easier to move to the next place and be able to make all the payments on that building. So my suggestion is that you need to really take a hard look at the numbers of what you're doing now. And I got to tell you guys, if you're thinking about moving, what you're doing now is you're probably running around like your hair's on fire because you're extremely busy. But what you want to do is organize yourself so that when you move from 5 ops to 10 ops, that we can get those 10 ops filled and you can keep moving forward. So I would give myself, and Jim, you and Hannah have talked about it, I would give myself 12 to 18 months of getting myself organized, talking to us, obviously, and getting a vision of how many ops, how big the building, what do I want, what do I need, and getting yourself organized so you can put the team together to move on to that next structure. And I think, and tell me what I've missed. I've been talking really fast. Jump in, throw it at me, guys. What have I missed? What have I talked about in the past that I haven't talked about right now?
Well, actually, Han and I were talking about most all those things that you talked about, Bill, and you're right. The one thing that we didn't talk about, which was rather interesting, which you put a timetable to when you said 12 to 18 months. Obviously, we've had previous shows that we talked about that the whole design process might take you 12 months or so from the day you decide you want to do something and to the point of where you do the design work, you do the planning work, you do the construction work, that, you know, you might be at the same time frame. So you're almost saying that you want to start doing this at the same time you start the design process in itself.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. And if I was to do it over, as soon as I had made the decision to do the building, I would have had my consultant come in sooner or right then, for sure. And I would have had an analysis done on what I need. And, you know, we talked about it a few weeks ago that we have a really good analysis on how you can figure out, based on what your hygiene department's doing, how many active patients you have, how many new patients are coming in, and how many days it takes to get somebody in your office, what you need to do to get yourself going. Now, I got to tell you, we're talking to people all across the country, and things are definitely going the right way. People are busy. And I mean, now's the time. If you need to expand your office, you need to start looking now. And if you start now, then you might be able to have a door open on a facility out of the ground within the next 12 to 18 months. Now, if we're doing remodeling, we're going into a facility, a strip center, something like that, obviously it takes less time to get something like that done. But you got to be decisive, and you got to have it figured out. You got to talk to people. I'm going to tell you right now, which I didn't do initially, was I didn't talk to people that were smarter than me, and I didn't talk to people who actually, like Jim and Han, who knew what they were doing when they do buildings. I was really good at doing MOD composites and putting crowns on teeth. So I didn't talk to enough experts as we entered into this whole process. But you've got to be willing to work. Now, I got to tell you, sometimes get geared up, you may need to increase your hours temporarily to start building practice so you're ready to move in. We actually had a associate come in and work with us 2 days a week extra above the hours that we were already working so that when we moved, we were able to easily fill the associate schedule up when we moved. So it's a system that you really have to sit down and look at and put together. But there's no reason why you can't increase your productivity so that you can pay for the new place. And once you're over there, you're running with more ops and you're able to be more efficient. But I can still remember Howard Fran saying that build enough ops, because what happens is if you're busy, you have all your high-priced help standing around waiting to get into an operatory. And the cost of the operatory over time is less than your labor cost. So it just makes total sense to go ahead and move forward with that type of idea in mind. So, boy, it's 9 o'clock. You know, guys, I apologize for this tonight. This has been pretty fast and furious. We haven't been able to take a call. I know I've been a bad boy. I know you're going to put me toward the end of the line, but I would like to come back and with a better plan because, again, this is all my fault. You guys know I have late hours on Tuesdays, and normally I try to knock off a little early, but we were just swamped tonight. So,
that's not a problem, Bill. And actually, Han and I had an opportunity to talk about a couple other things that were really cool and interesting as well. And we're going to be setting up the next 10 episodes. Can you believe it? We've actually had 10 episodes already. And
fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to be setting up the next 10 episodes. And obviously, you're going to be on the agenda for spending some more time with us.
What we'll do is we'll just have to pick a better time, and I'll have to adjust my schedule. It's just I didn't even when you and I talked last week, I didn't even think about the fact that I was going to be out of the office, and even with our partners, it's busy. It's just I seem to be very popular these days.
Yeah. So, Bill, you're talking to other dentists who also have an emergency case, a difficult case where it kind of run over and things like that. So it's a good thing, buddy. No apologies.
Yeah. So guys, it's 9:03.
Yeah. Next week we're going to have Mike Montgomery on from Live Oak Bank, so that's going to be a cool session.
I have to tell you, that is a great guy to meet if you're thinking about doing any improvements in your office. He's a sharp guy, and they know how to get money. They definitely know how to get money to get projects moving. Really a nice system those guys have set up.
Yeah,
and I got to tell you, if you have questions about financing, and you want to talk to a guy who's an expert, he is an expert. We sat in his program and visited with him, and it was absolutely fantastic. So I would urge everybody to listen in next week to that program. It's awesome. And I love you guys because you asked him a few probing questions about that stuff, and it's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing I've also offered, Bill, is that if any of our listeners have any questions whatsoever that they'd like to see on future topics, that they can email those to us, and we'll do our best to integrate that into the next 10 episodes. And also, if specifically on this topic, if they have a request or if they have issues, they can use you as a resource. Email us, contact us, and ask that specific question or ask her a specific time where you can get back to them and help them out on this specific topic. Let's say that they're in that process and they have no idea what they need to do or how they need to do it, and they want to talk to somebody that's been through the trenches and had their nose bloodied. I said, you know, you're the perfect person to be able to do that, and you'd be more than willing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we can set up either do an email, or we can actually set up a call to talk directly and answer questions off the air if we need to. So that's great. That'd be fantastic.
Perfect.
So,
perfect. Well,
yeah, so I guess, like I said, now's the time. Now's the time. I'm telling you guys, now's the time. It's awesome. So, again, guys, I'm sorry that I ran late, and the audience, I really apologize for not being here on time. We all run by appointments, and I was terrible tonight. So, but I will be back, and these guys will hold me, make me accountable, and I will be on time. So
well,
I'm gonna.
Han, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for catching me, Bill.
Yeah, I apologize again, guys. So anyway, we will. I look forward to listening to you guys next week on my way home from Swanton.
Yes,
we'll make it fun. We had so much fun that we did it 10 times.
All right, and I missed the dead spot. I missed the dead spot. Did you notice it didn't drop the call? Something weird tonight. Must be the moon.
Must be the moon.
I made up for that a couple of times, Bill.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
All right, guys. All right, guys.
Well,
Catch you later. Was that
everyone?
Take care, Bill. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for spending your time with us tonight. We look forward to our next show next Tuesday, again with Mike Montgomery from Live Oak Bank. With that, good evening. Good evening to you, Han and Bill, and we look forward to the next show.
Good evening, Jim, and thanks for tuning in with us. Till next time. Good night.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.